This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monk. Cincinnati's collaborative agreement is 18 years old and was considered an historic policing agreement negotiating after civil unrest here back in the early 2000s. And now, as the nation faces unprecedented protest over police brutality and the killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and other black men and women, will the collaborative agreement play a new role, and how will it be framed against new calls to defund the police? Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the collaborative agreement, our Cincinnati Black United Front founder, Iris Rulli. Iris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so very much. Good to be here.
Absolutely. And we also have with us Gerhard Stein and branch attorney and partner, Al Gerhard Stein. Al, thank you for being with us as well.
Glad to be here.
And if you have questions while listening, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email your questions or comments to talk@wvxu.org. Al, I'd actually like to start with you because for those of us who've been around long enough, we have at least a casual familiarity with the collaborative agreement. But if you wouldn't mind, give our listeners sort of a brief overview of what it is and its significance.
The collaborative agreement is a negotiated written agreement that was arrived at following a very extensive public process where we really engaged the community. The Cincinnati Black United Front solicited 400 witness statements. They led the community and community discussions. We at the table, we had the city, the FOP, and the Black United Front and the ACLU, and we negotiated a very detailed agreement that had some very key terms. First, on accountability, there was a commitment to having cameras in the cars. At the time, they were just cruiser cams. Eventually, they became body cams. Second, we established the Citizens Complaint Authority, which was one of the first agencies in the country that had a professional staff with subpoena power, and it was required to have their complaints investigated in 90 days so that the discipline that would be visited on the officer would have the benefit of community input. And third, there was extensive use of force revisiting on canines and on less lethal and other types of use of force. There was a commitment to bias-free policing and data keeping. There was the establishment of an employee tracking system, which would allow the city to track how the officers were doing and whether anybody should have intervention prior to having their judgment go askew and do some violence on citizens. But most importantly and most different from all the other agreements at the time and since is the commitment to re-envisioning public safety. In the collaborative agreement, the Black United Front very much wanted to get away from using enforcement where it wasn't needed, because that's what made the Black community feel occupied. That's what made the Black community feel persecuted. And by envisioning a system and actually requiring it, for the last 18 years, the city has had a written agreement that their policing philosophy would be guided by problem solving. And that means rather than going in to an area that's had violence and crime and just arresting everybody in sight, there would be a commitment to sit down with all the stakeholders in that area and determine the best way to root out the source of that problem. The city's been implementing that in fits and starts, but largely doing it with our criticism, so that we would like to see even more. But over the course of time, the city has reduced arrests by half, and that means that there's a lot fewer people getting locked up, and crime has gone down. So problem solving has been key to that, and it's something that is essential to the collaborative agreement.
Iris Rulli is the founder of Cincinnati Black United Front. Iris, you've been involved since the beginning here. And before we get into where we are now, we heard Al there say that since the collaborative agreement, arrests have been reduced and crime is down. What do you see as, so far, the legacy of that historic agreement?
What I see as the legacy of this historic agreement is that community was dead on and extremely courageous in pushing for a new way of public safety, more specifically how police do their business, and then even more courageous in how the community sees how the police does their business, and then how other systems in their communities work and can contribute to crime, blight, and disorder. So that's what I hope that our legacy will show, that the people who really have the power and who should be empowered by such agreements like this should be community people.
And again, you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our guests today are Iris Rowley, founder of Cincinnati Black United Front, and Gerhard Stein and branch attorney and partner Al Gerhard Stein. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. Iris, what we see today is a continuation of this struggle that we were all aware of here in Cincinnati back in 2001. And I'm wondering what position you think the previous action of the collaborative agreement puts the city in to respond to the demands that we're hearing now during this new wave of civil unrest and protests.
It puts the city in a unique position to say, hey, we've been here before and we've met the challenge head on. Where we are falling short is the continuation of it. And how do you institutionalize such reforms so that they can be built upon and not reversed and go backwards? So it is a constant challenge to continue what should be right, fair, and just for people who have been negatively impacted by unconstitutional policing. The other thing that we should be extremely grateful that we have this process and that we're not afraid to take the challenge head on. But at some measures in this, as Al described, arrests, we've cut them in half and crime is down, but we still see a disproportionate amount of African-Americans and their children being stopped and detained and arrested by Cincinnati police. And that leads us to deeper conversations. So we should be uniquely, keenly aware that in this challenging time that we should not be afraid. It was extremely challenging in 2001 to begin to sit at the table and have these conversations. It should not be as challenging in 2020 to sit down at the table and to continue the conversations further.
Al Gerhard Stein is an attorney and partner at Gerhard Stein and Branch. Al, I'd like to ask you the same question. We see so much happening across the country. We also see it here in Cincinnati in response to the latest killings of Black citizens in this country at the hands of police. Is Cincinnati in a more unique position to respond to what's happening because of what has happened in the past?
Sure it is. It sort of underscores how difficult this work is. For example, we've heard many people call for the defunding of the police and the shift of all these police resources over to social service agencies. And Iris and I have talked about that a lot. We totally support that. And we've been working at similar moves the whole time we've had the collaborative. Let me give you an example using mental health. We've always had a disproportionate amount of force being used on the mentally ill. And so in response, as through the collaborative, we've had very special training using mentally ill clients of the NAMI and of the Mental Health Association at the Training Academy and giving the police lots of extra training on mentally challenged people. We've now got social workers embedded in districts 1, 3, and 5, I believe, from the UC Mental Health Response Team. And they go out when there's a mental health call, but they usually ask for police backup if there's violence or if there's that kind of or a weapon or something that makes it unsafe for the mental health worker. We've got in Cincinnati something called Stepping Up, which is a countywide umbrella agreement among all the providers of the mentally to services of the mentally ill to work together to serve this population. Recently, when we've had a couple of shootings of people that were mentally ill by the Cincinnati police, I called on the agencies coordinating with Stepping Up to do a study. Let's deconstruct those client services and see where we went wrong. How did it end up that a client was approaching a police officer with a knife? How did it end up that a client had a gun when he was approaching a police officer? What failures in the delivery of services by all the mental health agencies can we uncover? Unfortunately, so far, the other mental health service agencies haven't agreed to do that kind of lateral study. And, you know, that's the kind of work you got to do if you're going to call on everyone to pick up and serve these difficult populations. And that's the work we're committed to continuing to press for through the collaborative. It's just not easy. It's just something that takes a lot more effort than you'd think. And the collaborative gives you the structure within which to do it. We're just not there yet.
Iris, last month, your organization, Cincinnati Black United Front, joined with the Ohio Justice and Policy Center and other supporters and co-signers in releasing a list in a document called Protest and Pandemic, Concrete Ways for Law Enforcement, Prosecutors, Courts, and Local Governments to Respond. And I do want to run through some of those. But before we do that, let me ask, you referenced being at the table in the early days of the creation of the collaborative agreement and the importance and significance of that. As the city looks to move forward and to build upon that, who do you think needs to be at the table now?
Well, currently all parties need to be at the table. Whomever is going to represent those particular individuals definitely need to be at the party. But if you go back and you look at our master plan, which came out of the refresh, we designed a process where more community members would be at the table under the manager's advisory group, because that's where this work is supposed to, you know, be housed at. So we included NAACP, we included the National Action Network, we included community people who are, you know, everyday essential people doing the work, who are part of the mental health apparatus in the city, who are part of organizations working with youth. And so that those brain trusts could come to the table and broaden the scope of thought, thinking, innovation, and solutions, recommendations, and to address what rises up through the manager's advisory group as we see issues that we've been working on. We still have multiple recommendations from that particular group of people who came in and did an assessment of not just the police, but the city administration and community, and gave us clear insight on how to move forward, and that's sitting on the shelf. So if we could pull that back out and let's get to the work at hand, I think the response from the city when you see things arise around us, because that's what has happened. Things are happening around us, and people then look inward and say, hey, what are we doing? So one, institutionalizing, getting people that can help us institutionalize the work so that we don't have to revert back to one every time something happens. I would love for Al to tell us, you know, how many policies and procedures we've actually changed, what is actually on the books, so that people can know, so we can start from an educated point as opposed to an emotional one. So all those people that we put in into the master plan to sit down and help the city and the police figure out in specific buckets what needs to be bettered, what needs to be thrown out the window, and what needs to be reconstructed. That's what I think needs to be at the table, along with all the parties. And the historical reference is so important here, because again, if you don't know where you came from, you don't know where you're going. And so we have to have people who are familiar with where we came from in 2001, too, and even prior to that in the 1990s. It's so important to know these issues so that you can know what you have previously addressed, you can know where you're going forward.
And we're talking.
And let me just
please
add
go ahead, Al. Yes.
In terms of who's at the table, Iris has been working very closely with 14 young people who are all very active as leaders of the protests and thought leaders among young people about police reform. And she's been mentoring them and bringing them along so that history is not lost on this group that we call the Leaders of the Free World. So I commend Iris in having the vision to see that she and I can't keep doing this forever, and it's really important that the young people get a seat at the table as well.
Iris, can you tell us a little bit more about that, about how that relationship is being built, how you're able to communicate, and how the younger people in the new movement are able to understand the stakes and how to go about seeing implementation of reforms?
Sure. We call them the leaders of the free world. And so what I did was I risked my life in the pandemic to go out to these rallies and protests. And some of them were in remembrance of people who had been murdered by police. To see who was organizing and to gather these young, very tenacious, committed voices and hearts and souls to see who wanted to join in on this particular body of work. And so those were those young people. And actually, when I walked up to them and I said, hey, who's organizing this? And they would say, we are. And I said, well, my name is Iris Rowley. And they already knew who I was. They already knew who Al was. And they had already started looking into what had actually been on the table. So that was really important that they had started that for me. And so they come from all over the tri-state area. These are very eager to learn. So they are sitting with people who helped design, such as the leaders of the Black United Front and their attorneys like Al Gerhardstein and other community people, to pour into them the historical knowledge and references that they will need. And to understand that this work takes a while. They ask me every other meeting, so how long have you been doing this again? And I say 20 years. And they see that as important to them because they don't believe it should take 20 years to get to this particular point. And they are very thoughtful about their work, and they're just a pleasure to work with because they really want to see change and they want to be part of the change that they're so eager to see.
We're talking with Iris Rowley, founder of Cincinnati Black United Front, and also with Gerhardstein and branch attorney and partner Al Gerhardstein. Al, in our next segment, we're going to be talking to a couple of attorneys who are requesting that charges be dropped against hundreds of protesters who were arrested here in Cincinnati during the uprisings in June and May. And one of the recommendations that emerged from protest and pandemic, concrete ways for law enforcement, prosecutors, courts, and local governments to respond, a document produced by Cincinnati Black United Front and the Ohio Justice Policy Center, was to apply laws and policies fairly to all people, eliminate racial disparity in the criminal legal system, including in arrests, convictions, and sentencing. And within that, it notes that recent data shows that Black people were, quote, disproportionately arrested for social distancing violations while Ohio's statewide stay home and stay safe orders were in effect. I'd like for you to talk a little bit about that, because you noted earlier that arrests have been reduced and, of course, crime is down in the city, but there's still this issue that lingers.
Well, this has been our challenge forever. The Black community is often living in close environments. They often are out on the street. There's a lot of community relationships going out on happening outside in the Black community that might happen indoors. We often point out that the drug use among white people is just as high as it is among Black people, but white people can hide in their basements and in their bedrooms and don't get arrested. So we have to be very vigilant to make sure that enforcement is bias-free. And that's one of the reasons we've called for the reduction of enforcement as any sort of primary strategy. If you can solve a problem without throwing people in jail, then that's the way we ought to go. And I was very pleased to see that Chief Isaac has said, with this new mask requirement, for example, that the police won't be enforcing it at all, that it's a public health matter and you should call the health department if you have a concern about it, and that the first response should be to educate people about the need to wear a mask and then offer them a mask. And that's when the young people met with Mayor Cranley, and Iris and I were privileged to be there with them, that's what they were saying. You know, they were out on the street and they were saying, you know, it just galls them, and it really defeats this effort to build relationship if a police officer is enforcing a mask requirement and the police officer, him or herself, isn't wearing a mask. And that's what was a lot of the people were pointing out. So there is a tremendous need to be extra vigilant when it comes to the use of enforcement and to reduce our disparities. And I was glad to see that the Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court finally, on July 3rd, issued a statement saying that we need to track the racial disparity of arrests, of diversion, of sentences, of who goes to prison. And this was recommended way back in 1999, but she's finally saying that we got to get it done. So this is something that has been called out for many years, and maybe we'll finally make some progress on it. I know there are people at the county level working on this. AFTAB is concerned about it and putting a group together to work on it. And it's something that Iris and I are calling on to fully implement with respect to tracking racial disparities and reducing them under the collaborative. The last thing I'll say on that is that we have seen this played out tremendously with respect to youth, and that's just wrong. So we have called on the city to create a problem-solving team around how police interact with youth, and we're very hopeful that that'll get done in the short term. That was part of Landsman's ordinance, and we want to follow through on that.
And Iris, another item on that list in the document that I've noted that was produced by your organization, the Cincinnati Black United Front, and the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, it suggests that these charges should be dropped as it relates to some of these arrests during the protest. And I'd just like you to speak on that.
Well, you're talking about the unrest people, or are you speaking about the stay-at-home order people?
Well, I guess in terms of the document, it's specific to the stay-at-home violations, and then
right.
I guess that it could probably be interpreted to be applied, but I won't speak for you, of course, for the people who were arrested for the curfew. Well,
yeah, both of them are listed inside of that recommendations document, and for the stay-in-place, again, just what Al said, this was a public health issue. Police should have never, ever been able to enforce that public safety law. So and now we see that we're trying to open it. It just didn't make any sense. I remember when Rayshon Davis got arrested, and I spoke to the chief and to the city manager, and I recommended that they have him do a video, not punish him, not go to enforcement, but go to something that would help other folks understand how important this matter is in this particular day and time. So they didn't listen. They didn't listen to me. but so now here we are.
Was that the gentleman who was on Facebook with the live video of the, I guess, street party?
Yeah. That was Rayshon Davis, who wasn't arrested that night. He was arrested the next day, which was extremely unfair. And then charges were dropped eventually. So, yes, the way that this is being thought out now, as Al said, that this will be handled by sanitarians, it should have been handled that way in the beginning and not utilizing police to enforce that public safety, that public health issue.
And in our last bit of time together, I would like for each of you to take an opportunity to just tell us what you see coming next in this ongoing dialogue and fight. Al, we'll start with you.
Well, I see that we're going to have a new city manager, and I see that we have a new energy in the community to promote these reforms that have been on the table and that we're ready to run with. I got to believe that our central commitment in the collaborative to using problem solving and finding ways to solve crime and disorder without relying exclusively on arrest is going to resonate with more and more people. And I'm hopeful that we will make even more progress in the future.
And Iris?
I'm glad Al was hopeful. It gives me hope. But what I see and what I think is that we all need to take these issues extremely serious. And we all do everything that we can with the greatest extent within our greatest extent feasible to helping to support change and those who want to be change agents in the process. I, too, am somewhat hopeful, but I tell you, it's difficult as a Black woman in America. All I get in my feeds every single day are negative interactions with Black police people and police, whether it's children, to their mothers and their fathers. So it takes a toll on you. It really does. It takes a toll on your soul. It takes a toll on your everyday life. It just takes a toll on who you are. to see these things. And then you have to really focus back in on being in your own city doing this own work and knowing that you have pushed the pendulum, you have pushed the needle, but we still have a lot more work to do. It's been extremely exciting to do this work alongside the Al Gerhardt team, who has one of the most vast brains around this and knowledge around this in the country. And so I'm hopeful that there are good people out in the community that know more. I just want to make sure that their voices are heard and that the resolution, solutions, recommendations, or even demands that we come up with are not seen as anti-public safety or peace officers. We just want ones that are accountable in their job and that don't mind being transparent and want to apply the same type of standard to all people and not different standards to some.
Iris Rowley is the founder of Cincinnati Black United Front, and Al Gerhardtstein is an attorney with Gerhardtstein and Branch. Thanks to both of you for the time you gave us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.